Hi, this is Dr. Lisa from the Dr. Lisa Soul Sanity Podcast, and today we're actually going to talk about iodine. And its family, also, we will continue talking about bromide, fluoride, and chloride. It's the second type of testing. The podcast before this one was talking about the thyroid panel testing, which you may know that has the TSH, the T4, the T3. And then I also asked to include antibody testing, TPO antibody and TG antibodies. If you missed that, go to the podcast before this one. It's talking about the actual testing that the medical world does, how it's not robust enough. It's not the best way to do it. And so I go over the whys and explain if you're going to get a thyroid test done through the medical world to do it correctly, and I show you how to do it, and I tell you how to do it. You also are always welcome to come and test through me. The other test you can do for thyroid that we do is iodine. We do iodine testing, and then we also have another test, which is fluoride, bromide, and chloride testing. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So what is iodine? What is the story? So I talked about how we have thyroid hormones T1, T2, T3, and T4. And what that basically is the T is the thyroid hormone, thyroxine. And then you have 1, which would be 1 iodine. And T2 would be 2 iodines. T3 would be 3 iodines. And T4 would be 4 iodines. So iodine is very, very crucial for the ability for the body to make thyroid hormones. The thyroid hormone is typically the T3. It's 300% more active than all of them. That's the one that gets into the cell and actually affects the metabolic rate of the cell. So that's what's really, really crucial in the energy and the metabolic and the health of the cell. So we're trying to get T3 and we're trying to get T3 into the cell. That's the ultimate goal, but there's a big story that happens here. I went over in the podcast before this how it's the pituitary that makes the TSH. The TSH goes to the thyroid gland and tells the thyroid gland to make T4 or to slow down, you know, make a little bit more of it or slow down making it. But it's basically going to tell it to make T4, and then T4 needs to get converted to T3, and then T3 needs to get into the cell. So that's the story, and I kind of went over that. But what I want to talk about now is this iodine that I keep mentioning. And believe it's an element that, believe it or not, was over 100 years ago was super, super important, and it was associated with the thyroid hormone. It was very, very, in the research and the studies you read, it was very linked to it. It was very important. And when you read the studies today and you look at our lifestyles and the way we look at food, it's barely connected. Iodine is found in trillions of cells in the body, and it's needed for life. It's needed for the cell life of the body. And so it's a very, very crucial element. It's responsible for the production of all the hormones in the body and in the immune system. It has antibacterial, antiparasitic, antiviral, anti-cancer properties. It's a very, very crucial, important element that we need to live with. When we don't have it, which in my case was a huge problem for me, when we don't have it, there's a lot of conditions that can be affected by your iodine levels. ADD, ADHD, as you know, that's one of my expertise areas, arteriosclerosis, breast disease, breast cysts, breast fibroids, breast cancer is actually linked there. Fatigue, which we talked about chronic fatigue in a lot of my podcasts. Fibrocystic breasts, I just mentioned. Goiters, which is the nodules, which I have in your thyroid, the big lumps in your thyroid. Hemorrhoids, headaches, migraines, hypertension. High cholesterol is a thyroid problem, so that could be linked into if you don't have enough iodine, then you get a thyroid problem. Infections, liver diseases, ovarian diseases. So we have ovarian cysts are very, very common with iodine problems. Prostate disorders as well. Thyroid, of course, as I mentioned. Sebaceous cysts, which could go throughout the body and through the glands. And vaginal infections. So those are some right there in a pretty good list. A book I want to share with you, you know, I've mentioned this professor that I took his courses and just love his information. I have been able to take his information and create a protocol for myself that's been just life-changing. I got my life back from it, and now I'm using it with my patients. So I can't say enough about Dr. Brownstein, David Brownstein. And he has a book that is Overcoming Thyroid Disorders, but he has a book that is, I want to talk about today, is Iodine, Why You Need It and Why You Can't Live Without It. Fantastic book. And it's just amazing. So if you would love to get this book, I highly recommend it. I'm going to try to summarize some of the things here so you could understand iodine a little bit better. You're going to say, oh, well, it's in salt. You know, it's in salt. I don't have to worry about it. It's actually not in salt. We have refined salt. It's one of the worst things that we can take. There's a difference. And he actually has a book. Dr. Brownstein has a third book that I have here in front of me. I've read so many of his books. He has a book on salt. It's called Salt, Your Way to Health. Very cute title. Excellent book. And I've been using salt in my diet. I was terrified to do that. That was a really, really hard life change that I had to make, was adding salt to my diet. We're actually going to do a podcast on salt. But just so you know, we're not talking about unrefined salt. We're not talking about the crap salt. I'm sorry. We're not talking about refined salt. The crappy salt that's in the foods and in all the products today that is just creating havoc in the bodies. You should definitely avoid refined, processed, man-made crap salt. That's not got iodine. And maybe the iodinize it, but it's not very available according to him. It's just not the way to go. It's a problem in your diet. He's talking about unrefined salt, the actual real salt. And so the best form would be sea salt. I know that you might know about this. When we talk about the fluoride, the bromide, and the chloride, we're going to get into that in another podcast, because I really want to dive deep into some of the ways that we put this into our diets today. But just so you know, we've chlorinated water, right? And chlorine blocks the absorption of iodine. So we have a heavy, heavy amount of chlorine exposed to us. So that's one reason why we wouldn't get iodine. Just a low salt intake, which is something that I did. I was taught through my dietetics degree to avoid salt. But, you know, this was in the 90s and no one really explained that you don't avoid natural salt. That's actually crucial. Our bodies are made up of salt and water. So then there's things that help. So you could just like not be taking in the iodine, but also you might be doing things or taking things in that are blocking the iodine. So chlorine or chloride is one of them. Also there's something called percolate, which is a metabolic form of chlorine, which inhibits the transport of iodine. And I believe that is found in water too. Fluoride is another thing that blocks the absorption of iodine. And that is in our water as well. And the dentists use it as well. And also something I didn't know that I'd love to share with you. Back in the day, they used to actually have iodine in the wheat and the breads and the cereals and all that type of foods. And what they wound up doing, and I don't have the years off the top of my head, but they wound up brominating it. If I can look at the years, I'm looking at my notes here to see if the years. But what they wound up doing was, I have here the 1960s, the bakeries, they added in the bakeries, right? They added bromine as a conditioner and it interferes with iodine in the body. So that was the year I was trying to look for. And so bromine promotes goiters. Bromine can combine with receptors in the breast. It can cause breast cancer. And so this is the problem, that our environment has so many things that can cause the thyroid to not absorb iodine, or these halides, this bromide, this chloride, and this fluoride, they actually can compete and get to the receptors before iodine does. So those are problems in your life or your lifestyle or what you're doing in creating an iodine problem. And once you have an iodine problem, it's going to lead to other cellular problems, especially the thyroid. So let's get back to how it works in the thyroid. Iodine is ingested in the GI tract, right? It's a halide through the halide channel. And it goes to the cell by something called the NAIS system. And what happens here in the thyroid is that you have two steps with iodine. And I know this is chemistry class, but I want you to really understand the crucialness of iodine, because I actually didn't. And I have a nutrition degree, dietetic degree, chiropractic degree. And then when I got into functional medicine, I was learning about it, but I still didn't take on the seriousness of it until I had a huge goiter that they want to just wait and see it get bigger to remove my thyroid. And I was like, oh my gosh, no. How did I get this goiter? How is this even possible? And for me, it was an iodine deficiency because I was avoiding it. So step one is called oxidation. And iodide, D-I-D-E, that's the one form of it. It gets converted to iodine, which is D-I-N-E. And the way we do this in the body is we remove an electron. And so iodide goes to iodine. But the important part here, and this is what, if you're a medical doctor, please listen to this. You're going to have H2O2, right? Hydrogen peroxide and TPO. And this is the important part because nobody wants to look at the TPO antibodies. And the TPO is actually really crucial in the story. So TPO actually has got to work with the hydrogen peroxide. And in this story is also calcium and something we call aiodolactone. And that all has to come together in a nice little dance so you get iodine. So that's step one, which is called oxidation. The step two is called organification, where iodine now is used to make your thyroid hormone T1, T2, T3, and T4. And you're also going to make that aiodolactone that gets affected by the oxidation of iodide to iodine. So when H2O2 and the TPO come together, they'll oxidize iodine to iodine, and it will influence, obviously, the levels of iodolactone. So it's really, really important. In order to make this alpha-iodolactone, you need about 1,100 times the RDA of what they say. So step one is oxidation. Step two is organification. It's really, really interesting. This alpha-iodolactone protects the cell from proliferating. So this was important for my situation because what happened is I had cell proliferation. When you have a healthy cell, you have a healthy thyroid cell, and it becomes oxidized and it proliferates, it's going to actually cause a cyst. And then if it keeps going on, it'll become a mass. And so depending upon what happens inside this, if the mass becomes full of lymphocytes, because now the body is attacking it and antibodies are sent out there, it's eventually probably going to get really hard and cause cancer. And in the thyroid, what happens is when you get a break in the story that I'm telling you in this oxidation and iodide does not become iodine, this H2O is just sitting there and this TPO is sitting there and it just kind of accumulates. And so they don't get to do their thing. They don't get to do their little dance. So what happens is the hydrogen peroxide now oxidizes the TPO and the TPO attacks and proliferates the thyroid cells. And the body goes, whoa, oh my gosh, and starts attacking the TPO. And that's why you can have TPO antibodies. So that has to be in the lab test. That's why I talked about in the podcast before this. You've got to check for the TPO antibodies because if this isn't happening, this step one, this oxidation isn't occurring, it could not occur maybe because you don't have iodine in your diet like me, or you're taking in iodine, but you're taking in way more fluoride or chloride or bromide, and that's binding to the cells. So you just don't have iodine. So that could really just be a problem in step one. So most people, if I'm talking to you and you have nodules and you have problems with the thyroid, with bumps and nodules and goiters, we're going to want to look at this first step for you because first, and then we're going to want to look at your antibodies. Although when I run a panel, I always run the antibodies because you don't want to miss this step. We also have a test since we're talking about iodine. We have a test to be able to test your levels of iodine, which I'll talk about in a minute, in a second. I just want to get to step two, which is that organification. So let's say you have enough iodine and let's say that it's, you know, the H2O2 does its thing, the TPO does its thing, iodine goes to iodine, and yeah, you have enough. So you're doing great, right? Then you have to look at the next step where iodine is used, where it's going to be needed to make T1, T2, T3, T4. And that's interesting steps too, because what's needed there is more iodine. There's an enzyme there that needs iodine. And remember we talked about cofactors in the last podcast, but there's also cofactors in this story called selenium and zinc and B2, B3, B6, B12. They're all really kind of important in the story. But I just wanted you today to realize how important iodine is. And I broke it down as simple as I can in thyroid health, but also it plays a huge factor in thyroid destruction. Glutathione peroxidase is an enzyme that actually contains selenium. And so there's where selenium is needed. So there's just these enzymes that are needed. These are these cofactors that are needed. And just trust me that these are all needed. So let's get back quick to how to test for iodine. There's two ways to do it. There's actually three. There's the skin test that everybody knows where you get the iodine from the drugstore. You can put it on your skin and you watch how fast it's absorbed. But that's not really telling us the cellular absorption. It's not telling us those are the whole body. So we don't really love that one. There's a spot urine test where, you know, I have a kit and you would take the kit and you would pee in a cup and then you would use the little paper and you would actually just test it and it would tell you how well your iodine's doing. That's a pretty accurate test, but the best test if we really wanted to do it, it's called the 24-hour iodine loading test. And that's again a urine test where we're gonna, you're actually gonna take a 50 milligram iodine tablet and then through the 24-hour loading test, we're gonna see what it does. How much iodine do you absorb? How much do you pee out? And so that's usually the best one. And the iodine, when we do treat people with iodine, we like to use iodide and iodine. And I find that one fascinating because some cells like iodide and some cells like iodine. So it's really good when you're taking an iodine supplementation to one, take it under a functional medicine practitioner, a nutritionist, or an MD's care, because you just want to make sure that you're doing the right test with iodine and taking the right amount, but also doing both forms, because some cells like iodine and some cells like iodine. So know that. And the last thing I can say is that some people are sensitive to iodine. So it's a very small percentage of the population, according to Dr. Brownstein's book. And the courses that I've taken. So, but you want to make sure, you know, that you, if you take it, and some people are allergic to it, so you might get an allergic reaction, skin rash, things like that. And sometimes people get like a little bit of heart palpitations or get a little anxious. So it's a very small population. If you do that, we usually back off on the amount. Obviously, if you're allergic, we just do a different approach. But you can also do it naturally. It's found in the seawater elements, right? So it's in fish. It's also found in kelp and seaweed and things like that. And a great study to do is to look at Japan. Japan is very, very high in iodine and in their diet and their thyroid. They don't have the thyroid disease like America. And so Dr. Brownstein talks about that. He talks about some of the studies that came out of there that the U.S. has manipulated. And it's a really interesting to really, his books is just been fantastic. So I can't talk about them enough, but there's a lot that goes on here. I can't get into the deep, deep chemistry of all these pathways that happens in the thyroid. But if you're having a thyroid problem or you have any questions, you're welcome to contact me. I do telemedicine across the country. Also, you know, pick up one of these books and see if you can expand on your medical knowledge, but again, don't let one replace the other. Okay, thank you. And keep listening to the podcast. We're going to continue with the thyroid series. Thank you.